From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. A significant moment in Illinois history came Wednesday morning at the Dirksen Federal Courthouse in Chicago. That's where a jury found former Speaker of the Illinois House, Michael Madigan, guilty on some, but not all, of the charges in his federal corruption trial. I would say it's not the most dramatic moment in the Speaker's downfall. That probably came a few years back when he was deposed from the speakership. He had held that position for all but 2 years, from 1983 to 2021. One could also argue for the day he was indicted on federal charges in the first place. Joining me now to talk about all this is Ray Long. He's an investigative reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Before that, he was a longtime Springfield bureau chief for the paper. He's also the author of a book on the former speaker called The House That Madigan Built, The Record Run of Illinois' Velvet Hammer. That's available now in paperback from the University of Illinois Press. Ray, welcome back to the show. Good to talk with you again.
Great to be here, Brian. Thank you for having me on.
So take me to the courthouse Wednesday morning. What was that moment like?
It was really interesting. You know, they'd been deliberating for 11 days, and the day before, on Tuesday, they had sent a note to the judge and said, "We think we've gone about as far as we can go today. Can we leave now at 3 o'clock?" And so, you know, we didn't know what that meant. Deadlock. We didn't know what that meant. Of course, you don't know what's happening inside the closed door jury room. And so the next day, they came in on Wednesday morning, and about an hour in, they sent another note and said, "We've reached a conclusion on X number of counts and can't see how we can get past any other decision to go up or down on a variety of the counts." In other words, they were deadlocked on some of the other counts. And as a result, the judge had all of the lawyers there, the prosecutors and the defense attorneys and Madigan himself, sitting there in the courtroom, and the lawyers got up and started arguing what they should do. And they finally decided, well, let's just go with what the jury has right now. So they sent a note to the jury and said, it's okay if you just come to a conclusion on some of the counts, and if you can't get a decision on the other counts, just fill out the forms where you think there's a guilty verdict and move on. So all of a sudden it went from, holy smokes, it's another note, to, holy Toledo, it's time for a verdict. And once they got that note back that said, you know, you can go ahead and have a split verdict, then they returned the verdict very quickly. And the courtroom was packed. Madigan sat fairly grimly the whole time in a kind of dark brownish pinstripe suit, looking down at the floor, mostly grim-faced. The jury agreed and stood up one by one that they had come up to the conclusion that he was guilty of 10 counts. They couldn't agree on 13 counts. And Mike McLean, the co-defendant, longtime confidant of Madigan, was completely deadlocked on all of his 6 counts. So as a result, Mike Madigan is now officially a felon in Illinois and joins this long parade of sad cases of Illinois politicians.
Yeah, that you and your colleagues have done a series on, looking at corruption recently. So what exactly was Madigan convicted of? What was he not convicted of?
Yeah, he was largely convicted on a scheme in which ComEd had stuffed a variety of his pals onto contracts through a third party. In other words, they were concealing that they were paying these people because they weren't on the regular ComEd payroll, and they did very little work, if any at all. In fact, there was testimony that some of them just faxed in their invoice for the month and did nothing else. And so that was a part of the major scheme. They kind of turned that into a bribery conspiracy. These were guys like former aldermen and precinct workers for Madigan, and even Eddie Acevedo, who was a Chicago Democrat and part of Madigan's leadership team for a while. And so that was a key part of it. Another key part of it dealt with a variety of charges that all surrounded his discussion, talks, and plotting to put Danny Solis, a former alderman, and he was an alderman at the time, onto a state board, preferably with a big salary that goes with it. And part of the plot there that the prosecutors outlined was that Madigan was trying to help Solis get on a state board after Solis said that he was going to retire as an alderman, and after Solis had helped Madigan try to land some business for Madigan's law firm. Madigan's law firm is a big property tax appeal business, and the allegations were that Madigan was doing one thing in exchange for help on the other. So he was trying to allegedly enrich himself, as Solis was trying to get a government job in the trade. Now, that part was caught on tape. As you know, Brian, Danny Solis was a government mole. He had been caught in a variety of sordid crimes, ranging from sex to trading campaign contributions and getting Viagra pills and all kinds of things that even included some testimony of him ending up in a Shanghai hotel with a suitcase of cash. So, I mean, it was a pretty wild and rollicking time.
Yeah,
right. In fact, Solis, even though he was given immunity from his own crimes to testify, the jury foreman told us when we scrambled after the verdict that, you know, he viewed Solis as garbage, that he didn't necessarily believe what all Solis was saying. And another juror told me outside the courthouse when we chased him down that, there were a lot of questions about Solis's testimony, and that he wasn't necessarily somebody that could be trusted.
Yeah, so I have this right. So the part that Madigan is convicted of are these sort of getting his allies, his cronies, if you will, no work jobs with Commonwealth Edison, the big electric utility, in exchange for helping them pass some legislation they wanted to pass. The part about Solis getting him, you know, business for his law firm, that's the stuff that the jurors, or at least some of the jurors, were not convinced by. What else did you learn from the jury about how they approached this case? It seems like, you know, they were pretty nuanced and they were pretty serious about it from the coverage I read.
Yeah, there's no doubt that this jury was pretty serious about the job. And we, in our interviews, we had a series of interviews after the verdict. And the jurors talked about how they could not convict either Madigan or McLean. They could not come to an agreement, either up or down, convict or not guilty, on the really premier marquee charge, which was racketeering. And that was a major count in the case, and they deadlocked on that too. Although we were told also that they were deadlocked 11-1 to acquit. So that also raises questions about the strength of the prosecution's case. Now, you have to remember, this was a big time showdown in the courtroom. This was kind of the thrill of Manila of fights here, because they had the A team of prosecutors going on one side, and you had $8 million worth of legal might that Madigan had paid for through his campaign fund on the other side. Plus, McLean had a great lawyer, former federal prosecutor, too. So every time the prosecution put up a point, there were major efforts to knock them down. So that, I think, also contributed to the split verdict.
So what happens next in this case? And I know there's a lot we could speculate about, and we probably shouldn't, but we have a president who doesn't seem to like public corruption and is, you know, pardoned former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich and is seemingly dropping the charges against the New York City mayor. We don't know what's going to happen there, but in terms of appeals, sentencing, what is perceived, whether there's going to be a retrial on the parts where there was a mistrial, what is technically going to happen next in this case?
All those questions are legitimate. Not all of them have answers right now. The sentencing date has yet to be set. There's also going to be a forfeiture trial. The prosecution has asked for up to $1 million in forfeiture from Madigan, and they'll have to have hearings on that. That won't probably happen until May. And then the question of whether there will be a pardon it just doesn't seem to square with the politics of Trump and Madigan and Blagojevich. Blagojevich, of course, had spent years smooching up to Trump and saying all kinds of good things. And his wife had been saying all kinds of laudatory things about Trump, too. And Blagojevich knew Trump way back from the time that he was on Trump's Celebrity Apprentice show. Of course, you and I know that he got fired because he was basically unable to handle even the small bore type of duties that he was supposed to pull off there. But they had continued to have this relationship, and Trump then, nearly 5 years ago, commuted Blagojevich's sentence for his own corruption that was initially 14 years. The commutation got Blagojevich out of prison after nearly 8 years. And then the pardon basically throws out the convictions, or gives him a break on convictions, but it's not enough, according to the state pension officials, to allow Blagojevich to start getting his state pension. So there's all kinds of nuances here, as you well know, Brian, from your great legal background in covering courts.
Yeah. So, all right. Time will tell what happens with the Madigan case. Let's take a step back in the few minutes we have remaining. I keep thinking, as I've watched this trial, as I've watched Madigan for 20 years now in the General Assembly, and you go back a couple of decades before me on him. It's a quote from Michael Kinsley, who said, "The scandal is not what's illegal. The scandal is what's legal." And I wonder how this case, how this outcome affects our understanding in terms of patronage, in terms of legislators doing private law work. What is and is not now legal in Illinois politics? Is our understanding changed at all?
I think that a lot of people are aware of this. A lot of legislators are aware of various holes and escape hatches, loopholes and escape hatches that they've stuck into statutes over the years so that they can push the legal limits of what can be done ethically and what can't be done ethically. And they've exploited those loopholes over the years, but they don't seem to have the appetite to try to restrict themselves. And so having these loose laws and loose rules, they've created an atmosphere that kind of invites or encourages people to, like I said, push it to the limit. Now, in the case of Madigan and Burke and others, it's taken the federal prosecutors to rein in Illinois politicians. There are a variety of things, like the counties, state's attorneys don't have the same kind of ability to do things like wiretapping that the feds do. And in this case, there were more than 150 recordings that were used. You just don't see that in a state court on political corruption. In fact, political corruption cases in Illinois can't have the wiretapping used. So there are roadblocks for law enforcement in Illinois that aren't there at the federal level. There are a variety of ethical reforms that could be put in place in Illinois too, but the resistance has always been there, and lawmakers seem allergic to reform.
Ray Long is an investigative reporter at the Chicago Tribune. You can also read about Madigan's long record run, as the title has it, in his book, The House That Madigan Built. It's available from the University of Illinois Press. Ray, thanks so much for sharing your reporting with us after this
great to be here.
Momentous week. Yeah. More to come here on The 21st Show. Stay with us.